Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of History Dweebs. I am Tim, and the topic of our podcast today is the death of Major Rudolph Anderson, Jr. He was a major in the United States Air Force. The only fatality of the Cuban Missile Crisis, which occurred this week, the week that we're recording this, 54 years ago in 1962, 13 days in October, Colonel.
No, I remember.
I was a young man.
Before I was born, Tim.
I was in diapers, but...
I was born 2 weeks after Kennedy was assassinated.
Really? Mm-hmm. You know, most people think of November, they think of Thanksgiving. October, they think of Halloween. November, I think of the Kennedy assassination. Mm-hmm. In October, I think of our topic today, the Cuban Missile Crisis. The closest we've ever come probably to a Third World War so far. So we're going to talk about the role Major Anderson played in that. But before we do, let me introduce my co-host. I would say panel, but we're missing someone, Colonel. Brandy, as many of you know, is out on medical leave. She should be joining us hopefully in a couple weeks, but until then, you're going to be stuck with me and the most dangerous man in podcasting, the very honorable, he's really the moral compass for the show, the Reverend Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
It's wonderful to be here today, Timmy. Have you noticed that there's a strange sense of... It's like the feng shui in our studio has been changed around. It's peaceful, calm.
It is peaceful.
Aggressiveness.
There's no dark clouds in the room.
I don't feel like rain. We're walking on eggshells.
I know. It's amazing.
I don't know. Something's different. I just can't put my finger on it.
Well, you better enjoy it because we only have a couple weeks and you know who will be back. But we miss Brandy. Brandy, get feeling better. She's probably all doped up and high on Oxycontins or something, but we hope you're feeling better, Brandy, and that you'll be back soon.
She's pleasant when she's doped up.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, but she has to be really doped
really
up. I mean, I mean, you're not talking just a, you know, a Percocet. I mean, she
no,
has to be.
You have to. She's like Keith Richards.
Yeah. You have to. I mean, you're talking at least morphine.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're gonna jump into the story. First, I want to give some shout-outs, though, to those who support our podcast on Patreon. We really do appreciate it. If you would like to support our podcast on Patreon, you can visit patreon.com/historydweebs, and you can pledge a little or a lot. Or how much, Colonel?
Well, just a wee bit.
We appreciate any donations because it helps us with the cost of producing the podcast, and we have a number of Patreons who have been very generous, and we want to thank them and give them a shout out. So thank you, Alicia and Chip. Thank you, Cindy Lou. Bridget, thank you very much. Angelo, thank you for supporting the show. Andrew Happ, we really appreciate Andrew. Jennifer Siemens, Charlie from the Insight Podcast, thank you, Charlie. Jahara, we appreciate you supporting us. I think she's over in Italy, Dolphins fan. Brandy McBride, thank you, Brandy, for supporting us. Amber McCain Scoville. Thank you, Amber. Patty Wooten. And our newest patron, Leslie Hager. I think I'm saying that right.
Thank you, Leslie.
Yeah, thank you very much. We certainly appreciate it. And again, it helps us cover the cost of doing this. And we're going to have some new microphones soon. So hopefully you'll find the quality of the sound greatly improved. Probably not the podcast, but the sound.
Right? It didn't help my singing, Timmy. I think my singing has been affected by this microphone.
Oh, you think that's what's...
I need a better microphone if I'm going to be...
Yeah, I'm sure it's the microphone's fault.
I like to think so.
Okay, Colonel, are you ready to talk about the life of Major Rudy Anderson?
I'm ready to grab this thing by the balls and run, Timmy.
All right.
I'm ready to grab it right... Well, no.
Okay. All right. No. Let's get into it. Okay, so Rudy Anderson, Major Rudy Anderson, was a pilot in the United States Air Force. You know who I think about when I'm thinking about this story is our listener, Jeff Chestnut.
Yeah.
I believe Jeff was in the Air Force.
Jeff was in the Air Force.
Yeah.
Really?
So my dad was in the Air Force, although it was during the Second World War, and I think it's before they had the official Air Force. It was the Air Corps then. And he did like radio stuff.
My father was a meteorologist in the Air Force.
Really?
In the Korean War.
Interesting. Mr. Anderson here, Rudy Anderson, was a pilot in the Korean War. You know, those bombers, I mean, those guys that worked on those bombing missions during the Second World War, I read where they had like the highest fatality rate of anyone. Like you were safer as a foot soldier on the Eastern Front, as a Russian soldier on the Eastern Front, than you were in a bomber. They had to fly, I believe, 23 missions before they rotate out, and a lot of them, they never made it.
Well, the things they used for bombers were slow planes.
Yeah.
So they were usually accompanied by fighter planes, but the problem was...
Yeah, it was long distance.
Yeah, it was long distance, and you could only protect them so well.
Right, right. And then when you're talking about Dresden, and the United States was bombing during the daytime.
Right.
Great Britain, UK.
Oh, they didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
They do it during the day. They do it live, Timmy.
Yeah, they do. And it was... So anyway, Rudy Anderson, Rudolph Rudy Anderson Jr., was a pilot and commissioned air officer in the United States Air Force. He was the first recipient of the Air Force Cross. As I remember, as I said, the Air Force really didn't come about officially until right after the Second World War. My dad was in what was called then the Army Air Corps. But there, Rudy Anderson received the first Air Force Cross Award, and he also was the U.S. Air Force second highest award for heroism. He was the only person killed by enemy fire during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and he died when his U-2 spy aircraft that he was flying was shot down over Cuba in day 12 of the 13-day crisis, and the day that was probably the darkest of the whole crisis, where tensions were the highest.
And that's a pretty impressive feat, shooting down a U-2 plane, Demi.
Yeah, because they're
very high.
Very high, yeah. And it was very risky, but when we get into talking about the missile crisis, we'll talk about why it was important that the U.S. was able to keep those U-2 flights going. They were going around the clock, 24 hours a day during the crisis. Anyway, Rudolph Anderson Jr. Was born on September 15th, 1927, in Greenville, South Carolina. He was born to a good family. He was well behaved and excelled in school. You know, I'm so used to writing these up for serial killers that I use for the.
Waiting for his dad to beat him.
Kill the dog or something, but. No, he had a normal childhood from a good family, was well-behaved, excelled in school. He loved reading about flying from a very early age. He spent most of his free time building model airplanes as a child. He was an overachiever in school. He joined the Boy Scouts and earned the rank of Eagle Scout from his local Boy Scout troop. And as you know, Colonel, Eagle Scouts, the highest you can go. Man, it's not too many people make it to Eagle Scout. So Rudy was well-liked by his teachers and his classmates. He had a good sense of humor and loved playing practical jokes. He was always bright and optimistic. And on his high school yearbook, his quote was, "Good humor is clear is the clear blue sky of the soul." So he was a kind of an upbeat young man.
Sunny disposition. Down the sunny side of the street.
He did. Upon graduating from Greenville High School in South Carolina back in 1945, Rudy was accepted to Clemson University. And it was there he became a member of the Air Force ROTC. So this is, you know, right after the Second World War. He majored in textile management and excelled in his studies. I majored in text management. I just text all, all through class. Yeah. But his real passion was flying and the United States Air Force. While a member of the ROTC, Rudy was active and received honors as a senior platoon leader, a Tiger platoon leader. He was a member of the best drilled squad and also a member of the Executive Sergeant Club. So some honorary titles while he was in ROTC there at Clemson University. During his senior year of college, he narrowly escaped death or a very serious injury. This sounds like something I would do, Colonel. He fell out of a third-story window in the barracks. He was chasing a pigeon down the hall of the third floor of these barracks when the pigeon flew out the window. And Rudy was unable to stop and followed the bird out of the window. Several witnesses said that, they were shocked when they saw him going flying out of the window.
That would shock me a little bit.
Yeah.
It wouldn't shock me around here at work because people leap out the window all the time.
Right. But by accident, chasing a pigeon, it would be different. So he was conscious when he arrived at the hospital there at the university, and he was able to identify himself. He suffered lacerations to his right forehead, dislocation of his right wrist, and his pelvic bone. But he didn't have any internal injuries, thank God, and so he survived a fall out of a three-story window. That has to be something that would be... you'd be embarrassed about. The attending physician said it was a miracle that Anderson escaped without more serious injuries. Now, this kind of made news around campus that this student had fallen out the window chasing a pigeon. And so the president of the university, Clemson University, a couple of days later received a letter. It stated, I read in the paper, I guess the school paper, that one of our distinguished senior students fell out a third-story window while chasing a pigeon down the hall. It did not state whether he caught the pigeon or not. This has me worried because I have often wondered whether a Clemson man is capable of catching a pigeon or not. Yours truly, signed, a cute pigeon. So Rudy recovered shortly from his injuries, if not from his embarrassment. During his during the summer of his sophomore and junior year at Clemson, he went to ROTC summer camp at Kessler's Air Force Base in Biloxi, Mississippi. You ever been to Mississippi, Colonel?
I have been, and I tell you what, Jimmy, I'm not lying to you. I have been to Meridian, Mississippi, and I tell you, it's like a third world country.
Really?
I mean, I have never seen, and you know, I'm from a city. Mm-hmm. We have the inner city. We have, you know, I came from a damn housing project.
Mm-hmm.
I have never seen poverty like really? I've seen in Meridian.
Yeah, they say Mississippi.
That's where Elvis was born.
Yeah.
I mean, these houses were no more than, houses were literally as big as this office. They were shacks. They had tin roofs on them.
Mm.
And I think I was probably about 11, 12 years old.
Man, you wanted to get back to the west side of Cincinnati.
Yeah.
They live in the high life.
It made an impression on me that I thought, you know what, this is what India must be like.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
third world.
Yeah.
So in 1948, Rudy graduated from Clemson, and he was commissioned as a second lieutenant in the United States Air Force. He completed primary and advanced pilot training and received his U.S. Air Force aeronautical rating as a pilot shortly after. He began his operational career flying RF-86 Sabres in 1950, just as the Korean War was breaking out. Rudy was quick to see active duty, flying dangerous missions into enemy territory over the skies of North Korea. He would go on to earn two Distinguished Flying Crosses for reconnaissance missions that he made during the Korean War. It was around this time also, in the early 1950, that he asked his high school sweetheart, Jane, to marry him. The couple was married in 1950 and soon started a family, with Jane giving birth to two sons, Trip and Jim, was his son's name. Now, she would later give birth to their only daughter, a little girl named Robin, and she was pregnant with Robin during the Cuban Missile Crisis. So he would never get, unfortunately, get to see his daughter. Rudy was thrilled with his Air Force career and happy with his young, you know, his marriage life and his young family. Life was good for the couple. After the Korean War ended in 1953, Rudy remained in the Air Force and reached the rank of major. So he became a lifer, and in 1958, with the Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union heating up, Rudy told Jane that he wanted to apply to fly the U-2 spy plane. And as you mentioned, Colonel, this was a unique plane. It was nicknamed the Dragon Lady. The U-2 was an American single jet engine ultra-high altitude, as you were mentioning, reconnaissance aircraft. And if you've ever seen pictures of these guys who fly these planes, I mean, they were like astronauts. They had their big suits on.
The thing was damn near a glider that went into space.
Yeah, it was very, very high altitudes, so that the United States used those, of course, so that they could spy on the Soviets and Chinese communists during this period. And so he wanted to fly the U-2, so he applied. He was accepted, started flying the U-2s in the late 1950s. Now, the U-2 spy plane provides day and night high altitude all weather intelligence gathering. So it could go in all types of weather, and they would have, you know, they had these very sophisticated cameras on board that could take satellite, you know, almost like satellite photos of what was going on the ground. The U-2 program was crucial to the United States during the Cold War, as I said, to spy on the Soviet Union and Communist China. But as you mentioned, Colonel, the U-2 was a very dangerous plane to fly because of its, in addition to its high altitudes, you always had the risk of being shot down. Despite the risk, Rudy wanted to fly.
Well, I believe there were no guns on the U-2.
No, I think you're right. They were completely defenseless.
I mean, if you see a picture of
their defense was the altitude that they were flying. But they're a one-man show. I mean,
they literally look like they're made out of balsa wood, the kind you make as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're very long wingspan.
So,
we'll put up a picture on the page.
Yeah, we will. But and I said, in these, because it's high altitude, you see these pictures of these pilots, and it looks like they're astronauts. They've got the big, oxygen mask and everything on. So I, after qualifying as a U-2 pilot on September 3rd, 1957, Rudy became part of the 4080th Strategic Reconnaissance Wings, and he was one of the top U-2 pilots with over 1,000 hours behind him. It made him one of the most experienced, no time made him one of the most experienced U-2 pilots in the country. So, you know, very dangerous mission. As I said, there were some things going on. We'll talk about some occurrences that happened with the YouTube later on. But, of course, probably the most famous, I think we'll discuss briefly later, is Gary Powers, who was a YouTube pilot who was shot down. Yeah, was shot down and captured over the Soviet Union. And they had this, you know, this trial. The Russians had this trial for him, and it was a big story back in the late 1950s. But anyway.
You know, an interesting side note to that, Timmy. I mentioned my father was in Korea as a meteorologist. Do you know how they worked back then? They didn't have radar.
Right.
They were using actual weather balloons.
That's what I was going to ask, was it balloons?
Yeah, they would use weather balloons, and I guess they'd retrieve these things and from the change in I don't know how it works, actually. Mm-hmm. And that's something to be good to look up. But
yeah, I forgot about the weather balloons. I guess they don't use them anymore, but...
Yeah, they got the Doppler radar right now, but before they were sending the balloons up in the air, bringing them back, and trying to get information from them. And I think it was the change in pressure and
there's some mathematical calculations that they did.
My father knew how to use a slide rule, Timmy.
Well, that makes him probably a one percenter.
he actually did know how to use a slide rule, and he was...
I never could figure that out in school.
But he was a lifer in the Air Force himself.
So. Okay. Now, was he in the Air Force or Air Corps?
He was in the Air Force.
Okay, so he came in after the Second World War. I'm not sure when it officially became the Air Force, but I know my dad was in the Army Air Corps, and I think it wasn't they didn't become a separate branch until after the Second World War.
Now, I'll tell you a very peculiar thing. As you know, my father, rest his soul, passed away. We had nobody had noticed it, but this is back before the, you know, now I don't think they give people, I don't think they give veterans, you know, this is my personal opinion, but I don't think veterans really get what they should be getting. Back then when my father died, they started showing up to our house with, you know, wheelbarrows full of cash and, you know, they really took care
of him.
And they paid for his headstone. A Marine color guard picked my mother up at the house, took her to the funeral. And just not long ago, we noticed that his headstone said U.S. Army on it. They did not have U.S. Air Force on his headstone.
I wonder if it was what? Maybe he was part of the Air Corps.
No, he was in the Air Force. We have his records, but they just made a mistake. And for all those years, nobody noticed it.
You know what? And, you know, one of the things that upset my mom a lot when my father passed away was that my father, who served in the Second World War in the Air Corps, when he died, we went to have a stone because he was due one as a veteran. Yeah. And his records was in a warehouse that had burnt down in 1967.
I remember you telling me.
Yeah, and they couldn't provide him with a headstone. So, you know, we took the flag out. We decorated flags and everything, but she was very upset at that. But apparently his... this period of time between 1943 to 1947 when he was in, his part of the alphabet was his records for his part of the alphabet was stored somewhere in Virginia at this warehouse. And, you know, obviously before they had computers and they tracked all this stuff, you know, databases and things. And they had been a fire, so they could not
verify.
And his DD2.
Yeah, DD-14.
DD-14. We didn't know. We couldn't find it, so, unfortunately. But anyway, so Rudy's going, you know, he's now he's, you know, flying his U-2. It's 1960. He's married. He's got two kids. The Cold War is heating up between the United States and the Soviet Union. As you know, Charles, when we were kids, we had to, I don't know if you did this or not, but we had, like, these... bombing drills at school.
No, you know what? Me and you, our age difference to me is just in that window. You know what I mean?
Where they
stopped.
Because
I wasn't born yet.
Yeah.
So I was not born until almost 1964. I'm actually the last baby boomer.
Yeah, so I was like 3 years before that. And I remember that we would, We would have these drills where, you know, they tell us to get under the desk or something. It was stupid because, you know, yeah. like, I was going to help you in the thermonuclear war. But you were alive, of course. I mean, you were around as a child. You remember the Cold War, obviously.
No, I remember the Cold War.
And it was a sense almost of not if, but when it would happen, right?
Yeah, I think everybody believed until really the, you know, we're older, I think, than a good part of our listeners.
Probably until the late 80s, maybe.
Well, really until Reagan came in and they, you know, Reagan really started an arms race.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when people thought, really a lot of people thought this is when it comes to a head because mm-hmm. then the Soviets went on,
mm-hmm.
but it bankrupted the Soviets.
Right.
I mean, it really hastened the collapse of the Soviet Empire.
Yeah, because they were economically weaker.
Yeah.
But I mean, growing up, it was almost...
But growing up, it was almost an inevitability.
Yeah, at some point it was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think people can't...
Because all of a sudden China came along.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and at some point the threat changed from, you know, Russia to China to, you know, there was this triangle.
And there was this brief period where China and Soviet Union were... allied.
Right.
I mean, you had big characters back then. You had Khrushchev, you had Mao, I mean, you had...
Nixon.
Yeah. I mean, these larger than life, Eisenhower, these larger than life mm-hmm. figures. But anyway, the point being for our younger audience, it was, you know, it was weird time to live through because you almost, like I said, it was almost a matter of not if, but when this Third World War was going to break out. So in the midst of all this, Rudy Anderson is flying reconnaissance missions in his U-2. Now, the United States and the Soviet Union barely avoided war in the late 1950s over the issue of Berlin. Of course, Berlin was a divided city after the Second World War. It was in East Germany. East Germany was part of the Soviet bloc, and they wanted the city to themselves. But the United States, of course, had a sector there. Great Britain had a sector there. France had a sector. And so the Soviets end up building a wall that blocked off their sector, and it created a lot of tension between the Soviet bloc countries in the east of Europe and then the United States and all the NATO countries. So there were conflicts there. There were also, in the late 1950s, a revolution in Cuba. Cuba became under the control of dictator Fidel Castro, who, after he ousted the dictator, his predecessor there, Castro declared the island now a communist state. So you have the Red Scare going on. You have with McCarthy looking for communists in the government. You have the Berlin Crisis. Now you have a communist state just 90 miles off the coast of Florida in Cuba. So a lot of stuff going on. 1960, Kennedy, of course, runs for election, and one of the things he pointed against the sitting vice president, Richard Nixon, and one of the things he criticizes Nixon for was the fact that Cuba became communist under and Eisenhower's watch. So there was a lot of pressure on Kennedy to be tough on Cuba. Castro in Cuba, in the meantime, was getting economic and military assistance from the Soviet Union. So all this was going on. In 1960, we mentioned earlier, a U-2 pilot named Gary Powers was shot down in a U-2 over the Soviet Union by a surface-to-air missile. He survived the crash, but he was taken captive by the Russians, and they made this big show trial, and they put him on TV, and, you know, it was a lot of tensions. Now, in 1961, shortly after he became president, the CIA came to Kennedy and said they had a plan to remove Castro from Cuba. They had trained Cuban exiles. The plan had been approved under the Eisenhower administration. and Kennedy, feeling pressure to remove Castro, keeping a campaign promise, approved the plan for these Cuban exiles to go into Cuba to retake the island and what became known as the Bay of Pigs. It turned out, of course, to be a disaster. Castro got wind of the plan, and they were waiting for him when they arrived on the beachheads there in Cuba. It killed a lot of them, took others captive, and it's probably a low point of the Kennedy presidency. Although he went up in his numbers in the polls, strangely enough.
Even the disaster.
Yeah.
Because it made him look like he was being aggressive.
He said, and his quote was, the worse I do, the more popular I become. But anyway, so you had all these tensions going on. So Cuba is afraid that the United States is going to invade. So they seek, there's tension between the U.S., high tension between the U.S. and the Soviet Union. And so Cuba then asked Khrushchev, Nikita Khrushchev, the premier of the Soviet Union, to send them arms. And in fact, to send them ballistic missiles to Cuba so that they can deter any further aggression from the United States. And to everyone's surprise, Khrushchev agrees. Never before had Khrushchev or the Soviet Union allowed their nuclear arsenal to be outside of the Soviet Union. So they did so in part because Americans had nuclear missiles stationed, they called Jupiter ballistic missiles, stationed in Italy and Turkey. So this was kind of like, well, if it's good for the goose, good for the gander type of thing. They agreed to secretly place nuclear missiles in Cuba starting in 1962. Khrushchev and Castro agreed on this plan in July 1962, and the construction of a number of missile launch facilities started that summer. The Soviet Union intended to keep the missile buildup a secret until the missiles were operational, which makes sense. And around this time, young Rudy Randolph, he was 35 years old, and his family was settling in Florida. His wife, Jean, was pregnant, and the couple, as I said later, would have a daughter named Robin. As a U-2 pilot, Rudy played an important role in the monitoring of the Soviet buildup in Cuba.
Well, Timmy, they needed to see what was going on with these buildings over there.
Sure.
And the way to do it was use these U-2 pilots.
Yeah, and this is, they didn't have the technology that they had, the satellite technology that they had today. The only way to get information was to fly,
take pictures and see what they say. So in October 15th, 1962, during these flights, another U-2 pilot, Major Steve Heiser, he confirmed the missile buildup when the mission produced clear photographic evidence of medium range in intermediate range ballistic missile facilities. Now, the information was given to President Kennedy, and the Cuban Missile Crisis was underway. It's been said during the next 13 days, the world was as close to annihilation as it's ever come. Now, the United States could not accept nuclear missiles within 90 miles of its shore. That was just not going to happen.
Yeah, it made the almost the whole country vulnerable to missile strikes.
Well,
although the Russians had intercontinental ballistic missiles,
yeah.
But they were timed to prepare for those. But with these, it was a matter of minutes before they could wipe out
most of
the country.
Timmy, I believe at that time the best the Russians could do were parts of Alaska and California.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have the capabilities, despite what we thought, they didn't really have the capabilities of hitting Kansas City, Chicago, New York.
Sure.
But
being 90 miles off the coast.
90 miles off the coast, they could have hit anywhere in the United States before we could even react.
Certainly anywhere on the East Coast, including Washington, D.C.
Right. Mm-hmm. So they were not going to accept this. So Kennedy had to act. So he gets his cabinet together and gets some advice. That's what you got the cabinet for.
Right.
And there were a few factions within this group. Now, there was one faction led by a U.S. general, Curtis LeMay.
We'll have to do a podcast on Curtis LeMay
sometime.
Yeah,
he's an interesting guy.
Yeah, he was.
He just wanted to bomb the shit out of Cuba and take them out by an airstrike, followed up by an invasion of Cuba. So that would almost certainly mean killing Russian advisors who were on the ground in Cuba and possibly triggering a third world war. Now, the other factions wanted to be a little bit more diplomatic.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's kind of like me and the devil, Timmy.
Yeah, you have the hawks and
yeah,
you have
the devil who just says crush everything. That's
right.
And me sitting back saying, you know, let's we're reasonable men. We
right.
can find an accommodation for this. We don't have to just destroy everything in our path.
Yeah, so Brandy's sort of like Curtis LeMay, General LeMay.
And
you're more like Dean Rusk. Bradley Stevenson, I think.
She's like Godzilla. She just walked through Japan just trampling everything.
Yeah, just not, you know, just so, stepping on buildings.
She don't care. Little kids,
yeah,
babies in strollers,
she
don't care.
Nah.
So anyway, though, the
big ugly Godzilla feet.
Oh yeah, you ever seen a feet? You got size 14 feet. So anyway,
you better hope she doesn't listen to this.
That's what she gets for taking off. The other factions called for a more diplomatic approach, but they needed Khrushchev to not put these missiles in there.
Right.
Nana and Kennedy decided on a third path. He would institute a military quarantine of Cuba, stopping any ship that carried offensive weapons to the island, and at the same time reach out to Khrushchev and attempt to find a diplomatic solution.
Yeah, so basically a naval blockade.
Yeah,
is what
that's what he called. On October 21st, he decided there was going to be a naval blockade. Now, officially, it was a quarantine. In legal parlance, a less warlike term than a blockade.
Yeah, because a blockade means is an act of war.
Blockade is an act of war, but
right.
this was a quarantine.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, they're just playing some word games there.
They're being a little Orwellian.
Yes.
It's like, know,
yes.
like what we, Operation Enduring Freedom.
Yes, yeah,
the
yeah.
Patriot Act.
Yeah, yeah, know. Yeah. They're trying to put a positive spin
yeah.
on it. Yeah.
So now, using U2 photography as a kind of public indictment, on October 22nd, Kennedy addressed the nation and warned the Soviets. It shall be, this is Kennedy's words, it shall be the policy of this nation to regard any nuclear missile launched from Cuba against any nation in the Western Hemisphere as an attack by the Soviet Union on the United States, requiring full retaliatory response upon the Soviet Union.
Yeah, and that's kind of chilling if you've ever seen that.
Yeah.
I mean,
he wasn't bullshitting around
right,
when he got up there. He was almost like Clint Eastwood.
This was a message. This was a live broadcast from the White House, just like the presidents do on national TV. But it was also a message to not only the American people, but our allies, and a message to Khrushchev himself, saying, look, it doesn't matter. What was it? You know, remember the Clint Eastwood movie? I can't remember. Where he says something like, his fault, your fault, their fault, mm-hmm. doesn't matter. I'm going to blow your head off.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what Kennedy was saying there. If Cuba shoots one of these things off,
yeah.
whether it's good intentions, bad intentions.
Bad intentions. Yeah. I don't care if it lands in France. I don't care if it lands anywhere in the
yeah.
Western Hemisphere. Russia has attacked the United
yes.
States.
Yeah, they made it very clear, so, red line, that and it was going to require a full retaliatory response, which of course meant nuclear weapons.
Now, so obviously we're on the brink of World War III here, you know, and as we said, a quarantine or a naval blockade is in itself an act of war.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if the Soviet Union, and they already had ships on the way to Cuba, tried to run through this, the U.S. Navy was going to be forced to sink these ships.
Yeah.
Now, once a shot got fired at that ship, the ship was going to hit the fan.
Yeah. There was a lot of things. I think Kennedy, and we'll talk about this later, but what Kennedy and Khrushchev both learned during this was that there were things that were beyond their control. They didn't control events.
Right. Yeah.
And the fear that Kennedy had was that someone somewhere wasn't going to get the word.
Yeah.
You know,
there was going to be a communication.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, trying to, because we're trying to make this a brief one because of space issues on Lipson, but, you know, one of the things with World War II that they did not take into account, they bombed Nagasaki, Hiroshima. And who got bombed first, Timmy?
Hiroshima.
And they gave them 24 hours to fully surrender.
Mm-hmm.
What they did not take into account was it completely decimated their internal communication structure.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it vaporized everything. There were no witnesses to this thing, really.
Right.
You know, anybody that could say what happened was dead.
Yeah. So, although there was one man who got bombed in both cities.
In both cities.
Yeah, he moved to Nagasaki after Hiroshima. Yeah,
he took up. But the problem being, and that was that, is that Japan did not have time to respond to the 24-hour thing because they could not gather enough information as to what the hell just happened within 24 hours. So we just went and dropped the second bomb. Had we given them 48 or 72 hours, they really had no way to retaliate.
The United States felt pressure to end it because Russia was getting involved.
Yeah.
And they did not want the same thing.
They didn't want Russia taking into Japan.
Yeah, they didn't want the same thing happen in Japan that happened in Europe.
Yeah,
happened in
Russia
Berlin.
Russia has a plane.
And they got foothold. Yeah.
In there. But anyway, the point being, because of poor communications or inability to communicate, Japan would have surrendered after they seen that first nuclear bomb go off in Nagasaki and seen the damage and knew that we could do it again. But they didn't have, their communications were so messed up and so bad that they did not respond within the 24 hours. So we dropped the second one.
Yeah. And you know, Kennedy had recently read, right before this crisis, Barbara Tuchman's book, The Guns of August, about the First World War and how miscalculations led to that war. And so, they were both aware. That's why when this crisis is over, they set up the hotline between Moscow and Washington to communicate.
Because it only took one guy to make a mistake.
Well, there was a lot of things that happened during this crisis that could have put us, could have, you know, led to war. One of the more famous accounts is the U.S. was shooting death charges, but they were fake death charges at a Soviet submarine in the Caribbean. Why you would, in the middle of this crisis,
you would be using
fake death charges? But the Soviet commander they had nuclear weapons on that submarine. He had the authority at that point to use them. Now he didn't, and that's a whole other interesting story we could get into.
And that's the whole thing is that the president makes this big decisions.
Right.
But there's a lot of little decisions that people have complete autonomy to make that could have gone wrong and could have
easily.
I mean, as Bonnie Tyler would have said, and I forget the name. They was living in a powder keg and giving off spark.
Exactly.
Clips it off.
Yeah, that's a good reference there, Kurt. But you're right. I think both Khrushchev and Kennedy saw that things were getting a life of their own.
Yeah. So anyway, stopping more arms would keep more arms from entering Cuba, but they would not prevent the missiles already on the island from becoming operational.
Right. So they still have the problems, even with the blockade.
They still
have missiles already there.
So the president decides missiles have to be destroyed before they become operational. The consensus among his military advisors was that they were going to be operational within days. In order to confirm this, President ordered around-the-clock surveillance of Cuba, increasing the number of U-2 flights over the island. One of the men charged with flying these missions, Major Rudolph Anderson. Now, this is a very dangerous mission. Tensions are high. The missiles are guarded by a battery of surface-to-air missiles. You know, it lasted for 13 days. Now, while diplomats searched for a peaceful solution to this, you know, military plan, the military was planning for all-out war. There were plans to evacuate Washington, D.C. The Soviet Union's embassy in Washington began burning sensitive documents. I mean, they thought it was this.
Yeah, it was it.
So congressmen sent their families back home because they knew Washington was going to be a first strike target. There were some days during the crisis that it appeared that the problem would be solved diplomatically, and other days where it seemed like events were spinning out of control. Now, on day five, a U-2 flight went off course and mistakenly entered Soviet airspace.
Yeah, that's one of the things we're talking about, how easily...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, in a separate incident, there was a computer malfunction in the Soviet Union's defense system, which determined that the U.S. was launching a nuclear attack.
Yeah, what a time for a glitch.
Yeah. Now, both instances, calm heads prevailed. So these flights over Cuba continued. Now, on October 24th, U.S. forces went to DEFCON 2 alert status.
You know what that means, Colonel?
Oh, it means the devil's on the way.
Mm-hmm. That's the highest...
It's the highest we've ever been on. It's one notch below all-out war. The following day, for the first time, surface-to-air missiles were sighted near a U-2. At that time, Anderson was preparing for what would become his sixth flight across that, over to Cuba. The darkest day of the crisis was on day 12, in October 1962. General LeMay and the other hawks advising the president, they're urging a military strike on Cuba. They were concerned that they were running out of time and that the missiles would soon be operational. On that morning, President Kennedy received two messages from Premier Nikita Khrushchev. The first letter demonstrated a willingness to work out a diplomatic solution to the crisis. A moment later, the president received a second rambling letter from Khrushchev denouncing capitalism and American aggression toward Cuba and threatening all-out nuclear war.
Yeah, they just got these two very different letters from him. They didn't know if there was a coup or the hardliners had taken over.
Yeah.
Because they got these two very different messages.
There was confusion.
Yeah, and it was like the height of the whole crisis.
And that's never been explained. That's never been explained for any good reason. Now, the president and his cabinet, they're trying to respond to these two very different messages, Timmy. Now, Major Anderson, he's preparing for his final mission over Cuba, and he made a pass over Cuba. He's approaching the shoreline when the Soviets fired two surface-to-air missiles at his U-2. Now, remember, these things they weren't necessarily really fast. They were built for one thing, and that was to observe.
Yeah, to take photos.
Yeah, so they weren't the most maneuverable planes in the world. Now, one exploded behind Anderson and sent shrapnel into the cockpit. It punctured his pressure suit, and he was probably killed instantly. His U-2 plane broke apart, fell at least 60,000 feet. Now, if you think about an airliner, when it's really high above the storms, it's 30,000 feet.
Yeah, so that's twice as...
So he's 60,000 feet up. You know it's cold up there.
Mm-hmm.
He was higher than probably the devil is right now on Percocet, Tim.
Yes, probably was.
Now, President Kennedy was he was notified immediately. It seemed now that war was just unavoidable. They just shot down.
Yeah, this is like the very worst of the crisis, right?
Yeah, so the day Anderson died, a letter from Premier Nikita Khrushchev, he sent another, proposed a trade of Soviet missiles in Cuba for U.S. Turkey missiles in Turkey. What he wanted to do is, you take out the ones in Turkey, we'll take out the ones in Cuba.
Yeah, and this kind of shook him as well.
Yeah, he thought, oh, shit.
Things are getting out of control.
Yeah. And he said, you get the missiles out of Turkey, we'll take them out of Cuba, and you promise us you're not going to invade Canada. now.
Or Canada.
I say yeah. Canada. Yeah. I think we ought to invade Canada, yeah. Timmy. I
mean, but he did promise not to invade Cuba.
And Canada.
All right, and Canada.
That's a little known fact in yeah. this whole yeah. thing.
It's one of those footnotes.
Canada could be our 51st state.
Yes, yes.
But we don't feel like...
It's cold up there.
Well, it's cold, and they got that health care system, and it's expensive.
And they have hockey.
And they got, yeah. The National
and Justin
Sports
Bieber.
Hockey. They don't even have... Oh, that son of a bitch, Justin Bieber. Don't get me started, Timmy. Don't get me started.
Continue, Colonel.
I am not a believer.
No, you're not.
So now, okay, Khrushchev's thinking. Now, Khrushchev was calculatingly crazy.
Yeah.
You know, he beat his shoe on the podium at the United Nations, but he was a smart man. He was a very calculating man. He wasn't like Stalin, who
right.
was a, you know, Stalin had mental issues. I mean, he had really...
Yeah, he was...
Khrushchev was not like this. And he was, you know, so he surmises that, holy fuck, you know, this is going to be bad for us, and I don't see us... So, the president... Now, Kennedy's desperate to solve this son of a bitch. Mm-hmm. He wants to get out. So he says, you know what? I'll take my missiles out of Turkey. You take them out of Cuba. I'm not going to invade Cuba. And but I might still invade Canada.
No. The missiles in Turkey, he had ordered out anyway.
Yeah, they were coming out anyway.
Yeah, but someone somewhere didn't get the word.
And they were still there.
And they were still there. But it probably turned out it's a good thing that they were left there by mistake because it gave them a bargaining chip.
It gave them a leverage.
Yeah.
Well, really what it did was it gave Khrushchev a way to save face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it made him look
right. He has his politics. He has to deal with in Russia.
He's got a safe face. He can't be backing down. Mm-hmm. You know, to this blockade.
Yeah.
But then he says, you know what? I get these missiles away from our border. Look, you know, it's a win-win.
Right.
So the Juba missiles in Cuba were obsolete and had already been ordered to be removed by President Kennedy, in Turkey. Mm-hmm. They were obsolete and already, as you said, been ordered to be removed. But for whatever reason, they'd never been acted upon. Now, the following day, Khrushchev publicly announced that he'd agreed to withdraw his missiles from Cuba. Now, everybody in the world...
Big sigh of relief.
Took a deep breath.
Yeah.
Now, many viewed the crisis as one in which a strong U.S. president had forced a Soviet leader to back down. The true situation was far more complex, and the final result was a compromise. Major Rudolf Anderson was only 35 years old when he was killed. He left behind a pregnant wife and two young sons. By order of President John F. Kennedy, Anderson was posthumously awarded the Air Force Cross, as well as Air Force Distinguished Service Medal, the Purple Heart, and the Cheney Award. Now, this is long before Dick Cheney Award.
Yeah, this was
the Dick Cheney Award this year anytime.
Yeah.
That means you've been a big dick. I mean,
Dick Cheney before he dicks you.
Yeah, you get to Dick. You get to Dick Cheney.
Yeah, that's not something you want to put up on your shelf. Your mantle.
You got to shoot one of your friends in the face.
I forgot about that.
So, after the Cuban Missile Crisis ended, Anderson's body was returned to the United States and interred in Greenville on November 6th at Woodlawn Memorial Park. A memorial to Anderson was erected in 1963. Memorial service was held in his honor in each late October, and on July 26, 2011, Anderson was inducted into the Air Force Reserve Officer Training Corps Distinguished Alumni.
Yeah, they still have a memorial service for him every October 27th. Yeah.
Jane Anderson died in 1986, having never remarried.
Yeah.
And that is, I mean, but the
forgotten hero.
Thing, a forgotten hero, an accidental hero. He didn't want to be a hero, but that is the, you know, when we talk about the powder keg, Timmy, that was the powder keg, and shooting him down, that was the big spark.
And that was something that got both Kennedy and Khrushchev to kind of take a step back.
Yeah.
And they saw at that point things were getting, events where they were going beyond their control.
Beyond their own control.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was kind of, you know what it is, it's kind of like, And again, I'll go back to me and the devil. Mm-hmm. You know, me, of course, being Kennedy.
All the rational. Yeah,
young,
very
charming,
rational. Yeah.
Good looking.
Her, Brandy being Khrushchev,
yeah.
You know, pounding her shoe on the table.
Yeah, yeah. Her big size 14 shoe
yeah.
on the table.
Yeah.
She got a...
Crock, probably a crock.
Yeah, it's a crock, yeah. Yeah, she ain't wearing no socks, mm-hmm. you know that. Mm-hmm. She got that toenail fungus. It
yeah,
makes
yeah,
everybody
yeah.
scared, but... And, you know, so it's like me and her trying to work things out.
Yeah.
And it's almost an impossibility because, you know, you're not dealing with the same rational person.
Right.
Fortunately, Khrushchev was more sane than the devil was.
Yeah, yeah.
Devil is. And so it's very similar to that. It's kind of like when I need something from her for one of my reports.
Yes.
And I come in and say, Brandy, you know, you're supposed to turn this into
she
me.
Pounds the shoe
on
the
table. She throws shit at me. She tells me, you know, she'll come and burn down my house, my office, my whatnot.
Yeah.
And then, you know, calm heads prevail. And
yeah.
I say, Devil, can you just calm down? And if you'll do this for me, here's what I, you know,
yeah.
I'll give you.
You're
this.
A man of reason, Colonel.
I am. I like to think I'm a man of reason.
You are.
I'm a man of honor.
You are, definitely. Now, do you have any shout-outs real quick?
I got tons of shout-outs.
Okay. How are we doing on time?
We're doing good on time.
All right. Give us some shout-outs.
Well, I start my shout-outs every time with one particular person.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because she is just, every time I see a post, Timmy, I just think, what a lovely young lady.
You're talking, of course, about Tasha.
You know what?
The beautiful Tasha out there in California.
And I just, you know, and I'm much older than Tasha.
Mm-hmm.
And I see Tasha and I think, I would love to have that girl as a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she just make you so proud.
She would. She's very intelligent. She's got a master's degree in, European history. I probably got that wrong, but I know she studied in England. Very
mm-hmm.
attractive, very smart, talented young lady.
She just
she's back. A tutor. Would love to have my children, if I had children, to be tutored by someone
I'd like
Tasha.
One of my boys to find me, hook up with Tasha, and marry Tasha so she could be my daughter-in-law.
It would be very
so
nice
then I would
addition
have a kid
family.
That didn't drive me crazy and I would like.
Yes.
I would look forward to Christmas, Tim.
Yes.
Let's see, who else we got here? Jeff Girdley.
Jeff.
Sam Hildebrand. Angie Ball. She's a lovely girl.
Yes.
Jennifer and Linda, of course. Missy Dean Horton. And we got the hockey playing Chris and Britt. Celine. And should we say Dr. Jeff Chestnut?
I think so. I don't know how he feels about that, but he is a doctor.
He's Dr. J.
Yeah,
Dr. J.
Dr. J down there in Dominica?
Yeah. Let's see, we got Teresa Slavin, Tommy Boom Boom.
Boomershine. Tommy Boomershine, how you doing, Tommy?
We got Chanda and Larry. Larry, you sweet son of a bitch. I read Chanda's post yesterday.
What was it about? I didn't miss that.
Chanda was doing the dishes and doing some vacuuming. And she was got music on and listening. And she's playing Unchained Melody, and
okay.
Larry just came in and started dancing with her.
Aww, and nice
he just
guy.
Told her how lucky he was to have the woman.
He was trying to get laid, I guess.
But you know what?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's
right.
The effort. You know, Larry?
Good job, Larry.
Good job. And you know what? He recognizes he's lucky to have a good woman. So it's good to, you know.
She's like lucky, that. Too. He's a good guy.
The Trowbridges.
Yes.
Of course, Colton.
Mm-hmm.
Phyllis Munson.
Hey, Phyllis.
The lovely Aaron Wentz.
Aaron.
Donna with the... Donna, give us a check-in and let us know how the pup's doing. We haven't heard about him in a while. Brian and Lisa Lawton, of course.
Hey, Brian, Lisa.
Lisa would be another one that'd be fun to have as a daughter.
Yeah. I like her hair. She has, dreads. Really cool.
Olivia Meyer.
Yes, Olivia.
Of course, Fallon.
Fallon, how's it going?
Katja,
over there in Denmark.
Over there in Denmark. She's another one.
Very
smart
young lady.
Just think,
very
man,
talented.
It'd just be lovely to have one of my boys marry.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see who we got here. Monica D'Agostino.
Monica.
How you doing, Monica?
You were just going to say Big John Holmes.
Got Big John Holmes. I got Sandy September. Bridget Clavey. Byron Snellings, Big Denny Mac.
Denny McNamara, how you doing, Denny?
Yeah.
Angelo,
of course. And we got William Trow.
Yeah. Hi, William.
Amber Krupp. Gina Spillane.
What if she's in relation to Mickey?
I was wondering that, but she's probably not old enough to know who Mickey Spillane is. So.
Probably not. Googling.
Let's see. We got Trixie, Stephanie Quick, Sydney and Michael, of course, and Wonder. Great.
Wonder Dog.
Jamie. Laura O'Reilly, Gabby Lewis, Sunstar, Tara V out there in Phoenix, Arizona, or wherever she at. We got Bond.
Jean Bond.
Lydia.
Hey, Lydia.
Brandy McBride. Maggie Glover. Jeff Appel. Christine Bourgeois.
I love her last name. Hi, Christine.
Mary Ray.
I feel like I should get dressed up just to say her name.
I know. And here's one. And when I say this name, I am not... It sounds like I'm making an indecent proposal to someone.
All right, lay it on me.
I'm just saying I'm giving a shout out to a person.
Okay.
So when I say Katie Moorhead,
right,
I'm not asking for anything. I'm just saying hello to somebody.
I got you. Hi, Katie.
Katie, how you doing?
I'm sorry.
And that is the last time I will make fun of that name, but I had to do it.
Well, yes, Colonel. It's expected of you, I think.
Yeah, Mary Ray, of course.
She said she went a whole year without any, a year of marriage with that name, and no one has said anything to you.
And okay. I was the first.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when you say, hey, Katie Moorhead,
yeah.
It's not Katie Moorhead, it's Katie Moorhead.
I got you.
You don't say it like a question. You
it's not, you're not using like a question mark. You're just making a statement. I got
exactly.
You. Lovely lady.
She is a lovely lady. The Heathers, of course. Heather Hall and Heather Poole.
Hi, Heathers.
Rebecca Montanley, Mike Eisenhower, Danielle Fredrickson, Andy Sparaccio, Valerio Bishop. I got approval from Nancy Palomino.
Great.
She did not mind me mangling up her name.
Okay.
And just going with Palomino.
Okay.
Kim Kamikaze, Jennifer Hawkins. And let's see who we got. Last week we had Suniana Satish Adanki. I'm not sure.
These are new members.
No, these are not.
Okay.
And Eddie Rushling, Yoel Handler, Sammy James. Here's some new ones.
Okay.
Melissa Lebrano.
Okay.
Bobby Burns. John
Welcome.
Gray.
Welcome.
I believe it's Christian Dorns.
I think so.
Brittany Powell. Sylvester Bates, Sylvester Bates, and Deardorff, he must be a Duke or something. Deardorff Barnett.
It sounds like a very...
The Duke, Deardorff Barnett.
It sounds like a royal name.
Yeah.
Welcome all to our page. If you're not on our Facebook page, join us at History Dweebs, the podcast, and... everyone we mention in our shout-outs are, most of them are part of that page, and a lot of fun on there and a lot of interaction. So join us at History Dweebs, the podcast.
And then last but not least, Timmy.
We got at least two more.
Well, oh, no. We saved them for last.
Okay. Well, you said last but not least.
No. Oh, no. Last group.
Okay.
Last group. We got what I like to call the Colonel's Squad.
Okay.
Because
Colonel's crew.
The Colonel's crew. Mm-hmm. And when we... the Colonel's angels.
Okay.
And when the... When these,
Chuck's angels.
When these... When you're doing a Christmas story, Timmy, you got to remember, if anything happens to the Colonel, I got a whole bunch of ladies.
Well, you're helping me write this thing, too.
They got
too,
my so. Back. So, let's see. Who we starting with? Angie Cobes.
Okay, Angie.
All right. Now, she likes to give me hell, but I know she on the Colonel crew. Angie Ball.
Angie.
Nicola.
Nicola Reed.
Nicola is my legal advisor and basically
counselor.
My life coach.
Yeah, well, you need one.
Yeah. Sarah, used to be Sarah Spaghetti.
Yeah.
Now she's Sarah Mimosa.
Okay.
Jen Burdick.
Mm-hmm.
Karen Barnes, of course. The two lovely Irish girls, Janet Fitzgerald and Frances Darden.
Lasses.
And Jessica Williams, who's going to help me, because I'm telling you, I said it on the live thing, Timmy, my back hurts from carrying this show. The woman is a massage therapist. She can fix up my spine. She's like a chiropractor with a table. So, Jessica.
The ones the masseuses I go to, they give you happy endings.
Yeah, Jessica.
I don't know. They don't have certificates necessarily.
Jessica's the legit kind.
I know.
She's
the kind I wouldn't go to.
What she does on the side, I don't know.
Okay.
I do not know, but let's see. Amanda Bocce Ball.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, there's one person, you see her picture on the internet, and she looks like, she's just this petite, cute, lovely look. It looks like if you seen her in person, you couldn't help but hug her.
Mm-hmm.
But she's crazy as hell. She's probably the craziest person to listen to this show, Timmy.
Who that would be?
That's Allie.
Allie over there,
you know, Allie.
Australia,
Allie.
Down Under, Rue, as we affectionately call her. She's part of the Insight
with
podcast.
Charlie.
Yes,
Charlie seems to be a little bit more reasonable and rational, but Allie's out of her damn mind.
Allie's coming. She's visiting the United States next June. We're going to see her in Indianapolis
her
at the CrimeCon.
CrimeCon. We're going to go over there and see her. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, we have the lovely Lady Beverly.
Yes. Hope you're doing better, Lady Beverly. We miss you. We're thinking about you.
And then, of course, you know, I shouldn't even have to say a name. This really should be called Dottie Scott's History Dweebs.
Yeah. Yes.
And Dottie was kind enough to try to help us out with the show here.
She's going to help us out with microphones.
Yes, she is. Dottie, we appreciate that greatly. We appreciate it. And honestly, we do this show. I know Dottie, only one person got killed. They didn't get murdered. But you got to understand, when the devil's not here, Dottie, Timmy and I got to actually try to do real history. because we can't do that if Brandy's here. Because when she, you know.
Her expertise is in,
it's in
the macabre.
The macabre. It's in, you know, clothing,
death,
shoes,
and murder. And,
yeah. And a mayhem. Satanic things.
Yes.
You know, there was nothing satanic in here.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about actual historical events that we have to get right, and we don't really have a margin for error.
Yes.
We can't really do that when Brandy's here. So
She hits us a lot.
She hits us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't know who Khrushchev is.
No.
She wouldn't even know.
I don't think she knows who Kennedy is.
No. When I said, you know, we're going to do one,
I'm
on
I'm sure
a,
she knows what
YouTube.
Cuba is. Yeah.
No, I said, Tim, we're going to do one of a guy that flew a U-2 plane.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, oh, cool, did he meet Bono? And I was like, oh, for the love of God, woman. So, you know, that's why we don't do heavy history
right.
The devil's
here. I understand.
So anyway, that is all I have.
Okay. We apologize for the short podcast. We had an opportunity to do one more podcast in the month of October. We had a little space left on our hosting site, so we wanted to get something out there for you. So we hope you enjoyed it. Where can people find us, Colonel?
People can find us on – the best place to interact with us is on our Facebook page.
That's History Dweebs, the podcast group. Yes.
Now, what we would love – and I don't know if there's a way to put a link or instructions on that. What we would really love – we got another nice review – is for you to put a review on iTunes. You can find us on iTunes, and we would love for you to put in a link, a review up there for us. This is going to be a bad one because you're just going to piss me off.
Well, it would be. We did get a nice review, and we really appreciate that. But I couldn't figure it out because they were talking about the show ending.
No, I think she was saying, the person was saying, I know how the show's going to end. Brandy's going to get mad and kill us both.
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah. And that's probably an astute observation.
And you
but TH0021, thank you very much for your very kind review. We appreciate it.
So if you could really, we'd really appreciate that. And, of course, anybody that feels so inclined, you can find us on Patreon. Patreon, do a search for History Dweebs.
Yeah, patreon.com/historydweebs. We're on Twitter at historydweebs1.
Yeah.
And Stitcher, we're all over the place. We're more popular than Captain Kangaroo.
We are more popular than Captain Kangaroo and his little molesting partner, Mr. Green Jeans.
Yeah, I don't know if he was a molester, but we can talk about that next time. So any final thoughts, Colonel?
I got no final thoughts. It's just, Timmy, it's been a joy. It's been a joy, Timmy.
It is. It's a pleasure to.
This was like. Does this feel like how podcasting is supposed to be?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, without all the interruptions and cursing
and nonsense and the foul language
and then the belching and the yawning, Candy Crush. Yeah, I think this is kind of how it's supposed to work.
I mean, it's so nice to read my script and not have Brandy lean over and say, "Hey, pull my finger."
I know.
You know, I mean, that quit becoming funny in third grade. You know,
we'll see y'all again next time on History Dweebs. Bye, everyone.
Day.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.